Welcome to the Rams Writer Podcast.
Tight angle, cross to Pearson. Pearson scores! Stephen Pearson scores for Derby County!
From Wisdom. He's round! By Cashin. Goal! Well, well! Back post. Forsyth heads on goal. It's looping. It's in! Derby has scored! It's Craig Forsyth with a looping header at the back post. Sibley shoots across. Goal! Yes! He scored! Lewis Sibley in the 90th minute! The goal we wanted has come!
Hello and welcome back to the Rams Writer Podcast. Simon Long and Chris Holt here. Well, unfortunately, it is another loss to talk about. Another home defeat, another two goals conceded, another match where we don't score any goals. Playoffs now looks like they're hanging in the balance, to say the least. We're still there, but we're not actually in the top six anymore. Chris, good evening, mate.
Good evening, Simon.
We always knew it was going to be a tough ask against Ipswich Town. But now, if I'd recorded this on Saturday after the game, after I'd got back from Pride Park, I think there would have been a lot of emotional talk, a lot of an emotional speak, and would say, oh, we're a bag of crap and all this. But actually, giving it time and thinking about it, looking back at the watching the game back on Rams TV, I might have been a bit wrong, because I know a lot of us were disappointed with the result, but in fairness, there was some positive sprouts, if you like. And the first one was the change in formation back to a 3-5-2. Now, you and I have discussed this on the show, and it happened. I know we lost, but what did you think of the 3-5-2?
3-5-2 is the preferred system that Paul Warne likes to play. I'm not convinced that we've got the pace in the back to play a 3-5-2 as the counter-attacks showed. We'll come on to the defence throughout the pod, because you're right, a change formation was needed. We do play better with a wing-back model, because that allows service to Collins and McGoldrick up top. And it also allows Jason Knight to go forward almost as a floating number 10. Mm. But again, I personally think we came undone with personnel rather than formation.
Yeah, it's a good shout. We did. To be honest, I thought the team was I was quite happy with the team, to be honest, when I saw it. So Wildsmith in goal, Rooney, we've been mentioning him, finally gets another go in the team. Rooney, Cashin and Forsyth as your centre-backs. The five in midfield, Mendes, Lang and Hayden Roberts, your wing-backs. And a midfield three of Smith, Bird and Knight. And then obviously a top two of McGoldrick and James Collins. I just want to touch on the strikers first. McGoldrick and Collins, obviously neither of them found the net. McGoldrick missed an absolute sitter, header from 2 or 3 yards out. Put it wide. I thought it was in. I was celebrating, but it didn't. It wasn't in. And Collins did his... I thought a lot of people slated Collins after the game. What does he do? What does Collins do? Doesn't do anything. Just runs around. He can't touch it. I actually thought Collins got into some really good positions. He was let down by the failure of our wing-backs or our midfielders to actually find him. And it's the same with McGoldrick. Again, some good positions, but his best chance he had was at the end of the first half, header from 3 or 4 yards out, and he hits the side netting with it. The service was shocking. And Collins, the amount of times I saw Collins turn around to either Roberts or Mendes Lang, berating him because he wants the ball in a certain position. He's pointing to where he wants it, and he's not getting it. And I have been a bit of a critic of Collins on this show, but I know you like him, Chris. And I think, actually, he was rightly to be turning around and saying the delivery is poor, because it was. Why can't we put a decent cross into the box anymore?
James Collins' repertoire for scoring goals is in the 6-yard box, penalty spot area, with his head, volleys, brings it down off his chest. He's a very robust centre forward. You're not getting electric pace with him. You're getting a battering ram who basically needs service to his head. And you're absolutely spot on, Simon. The other thing that really frustrated me again was we scored that goal at Oxford with the cross from Rooney.
Yeah.
Was it me or was we trying to do exactly the same cross throughout the game? And it became so obvious the tactics that they were putting together to get the ball into the box. You're right, though. Basic service is lacking. And I think this is what you get when tiredness doesn't come into it. I just think there is a lack of quality within the squad to allow the service for Collins. Am I being harsh? Bear in mind, I've been supporting this squad that's good enough, in my opinion, still a little bit. But I think that I'm not going to use the tired excuse that people have been saying. These are professional sportsmen. I just think that sometimes there's almost a panic that sets in when the ball comes to feet to allow distribution with a cross. And you're quite right, Simon. Collins must be literally pulling what little hair he's got out left, because he's getting all the...
He's the scapegoat at the minute.
Yeah, he's getting all the backlash from fans saying, hey, what does he do? He's wasting time. The guy works his socks off. He gets into some very good positions, especially on the elbow of the 6-yard box near post, on the penalty spot. There's numerous occasions where he's there just waiting for a delivery that he can pretty much just stretch his neck muscles, turn his head, and just steer the ball where it needs to be into the top corner of the net. Going back to the McGoldrick chance, you're quite right. I'm not quite sure what he wanted to do with that, because it wasn't that close. If you actually look at the finish, for saying how close he is to the goal, it's a really poor attempt. I don't know if that was...
It's almost like he had one eye on the keeper, one eye on the post, weren't it?
Yeah. You would have expected to at least hit either the post or the keeper, but it barely touched the side netting, to be fair. So
that felt like the only decent cross all game.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That was perfect. And that wasn't the early cross. That was Mendes Lang getting a little bit closer to the byline and putting it back across. But I just, yeah, it was. I think, as I said, I think if we recorded this on Saturday when I still harbored emotion of losing, it would have been a difference. But the start of the game, we weren't in it at all for the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so. There was a bit of nervousness, a bit of tension about us, a bit of, I don't know, trying to readapt to a new formation. But all of a sudden we got into the game and we started passing the ball almost like we did, you know, sort of in the Liam Rossini days. But we started passing the ball around and putting Ipswich off their stride a little bit. They couldn't get near us. But again, we just lacked that quality in the final third. And that's basically what's cost us. I mean, you look where the goal came from. It was our corner, weren't it? Keeper catches it. No one sort of gets in his way to stop him, slow him down. Throws it out. Long diag. Header across. I think it was Cashin, I think he beat in the air. Header down to Smith, made a bit of a meal out of the clearance. Forced to Chaplin, who takes a touch and does what he does best, and that score goals. And immediately then I thought, it's not happening today. But I've got to give them a little bit of credit, because their heads seem to... Yeah, we've mentioned about their heads dropping. They didn't really seem to drop today on Saturday.
And who wasn't in that starting 11?
Horahan.
There you go.
Were you surprised by that?
No.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't neither.
I think he's become a bad egg. I think we spoke about it previously. Yes, he got taken off after 43 minutes against Fleetwood. He was berating players on the pitch then. He was certainly berating players against Peterborough, as we discussed on the pod. I don't think he's been taken out of the team because of his ability at all. I think he's been taken out of the team because of his attitude. That's just a conspiracy, by the way. There you go. There's Chris Holt's conspiracy of the week.
speculative, as Darren Robinson likes to say. No, I think you're right. It could be a factor of that. Look, I get it. Players want to win, you know, and players want to score. Players want to make a good pass. They want to make an impact. And Horahan's failing to do that at the minute. And at the moment, rather than, I guess, doing the basics well, he's just, like you say, blaming everyone else, berating everyone else. And it might be the fact that he thinks he's too good for this league. You know, it might be the fact that he thinks this team is better than they're currently showing.
Or he could be one of those athletes who can't accept the fact that his brain says yes, but his body says no.
Yeah, potentially.
And it's him accepting in his own way. And it's a pretty... And again, it's speculative that this is him on the demise of his career, which is inevitable because of his age. We all got excited at the start of the season. Me, obviously, at the top of that tree saying, yep, this is a marquee signing.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of them, weren't there, the marquee sign.
Yeah, and he was signed for a system that was with that coach at the time. That was his directive, the Rossini style of football, which we'll come to in the pod, because we've had discussions pre-match and after-match about where we are now and where we were then. Will you see him back in the team, Simon? What do you reckon?
I can't see it at the minute. I can't see him start. He didn't really make an impact coming on. So I just can't see. I thought the midfield three of Bird, Smith and Knight is something that can be worked on. And I think it's something that can be effective. With Smith now in there, there's your competitive player, if you like. There's your player that's going to put tackles in. It frees up Bird to do the things he likes to do, and that's have the ball at his feet and make passes. And it frees up Knight to get forward in and around the box. And he did do that. To be fairness, Knight was trying to get in and around the box. I think he had one chance and he decided to take it past the player and then fall over. And at first glance, it was right in front of me. I was sat down in the lower end of the north stand. And I thought, it's touched him. I've seen him given. Obviously, looking back at it, not for me. Not a penalty for me.
I agree. My only surprise, I thought, and I say this quite open, I'm surprised Mendes Lang started, because I think he's done. I think his engine needs seriously looking after. I think he needs a break.
He needs a service, doesn't he?
Yeah. And I'm just wondering whether the Easter program is going to be too much for him, and whether that's the good time to rest him over the Easter and then bring him back for the last five. Because I would have played, personally, I would have played Barkhouse. If you're playing the 3-5-2, I think Barkhouse's distribution and crossing is the best of our wide men. And let's be honest, not all three of them aren't or don't have a reputation for their crossing, but I think he's the best of the three.
We'll park the Easter running just for a minute, because I do want to come on to that and obviously around squad and all that sort of stuff. But just moving on, obviously, to, well, before their second goal, Derby's disallowed goal. The strangest thing I've ever seen at a football game, a perfectly legitimate goal. I'm celebrating. I'm going nuts. I'm high-fiving my kids and everything. And I'm like, what? And then when they looked at the scoreboard about 5 minutes later, they said, Daddy, did we not score? Well, it's complicated. I just had a six-year-old, a four-year-old. It didn't count. everyone around us was going, what's that for? Well, no idea. And then it turns out, the linesman called a foul, I think, on the keeper. Miscommunication was the words that were used in Paul Warren's press conference afterwards. And an apology issued as well. Well, that's twice now in, what, four or five games? We've had decisions where the officials haven't been sure and they've apologised for making a mistake. That's Plymouth, the penalty at Plymouth. And now a legitimate goal wiped off. And to be honest, the way things were going, I think that goal would have actually lifted us. We've seen it happen. We saw it happen at Plymouth. When Plymouth got that equaliser, the stadium were lifted, the players were lifted. I think that was exactly the goal that Derby needed. And I think that gone in then, the potential was there to take all 3 points.
But well done. I certainly think that it would have given us a foundation to certainly not lose. The two things I'll say about the goal, and first of all, I love how many different people have got a theory on it from the Ipswich fans on Twitter.
I saw one. The only one I've seen, this was on, I think, was it on Facebook? Yeah, I think it might have been Instagram, something like that. But I saw one say, oh, no, it's not a foul on the keeper. It's a push on our number 15.
Yeah, from Hayden Roberts. I was going to say that.
Oh, was it? Oh.
Yeah, so the only two things I can see of the goal.
Yeah, putting your referee's head on.
Putting my referee's head on is McGoldrick in an offside position? without looking at it again.
But he's not flagged for offside.
No, he's not flagged for offside. He's not interfering with the keeper as such because he's not blindsiding the keeper. The keeper has got mobility and he's got a clear vision on the cross. And he can move side to side. I saw the Hayden Roberts. He's attacking the ball. He's not attacking the player. There is contact with 15, but yeah, you see that in every corner.
I've got to say, you see all sorts of contacts at corners that don't get pulled.
I think it's one of those cases where an official has made an error on judgment of what he think he has seen, realised after his flag's gone up, or the goals were disallowed. He's had a conscious look at himself and look in his mind of what he actually probably realised what he did see and didn't have the courage to say to the referee before the kickoff took place that actually, can I change my decision again? I think it was a goal.
Would he have been well within his rights to do that? Just to make it clear? Could he have done
that? Yeah, yeah. I think the ruling is, if I remember rightly, I've got to be careful what I say because I could be referees this, I could be completely wrong. I think you can't overrule the decision once the referee has blown his whistle. But there must have been, they didn't confer that much either, did they?
No, not. I don't know, mate. I was too busy celebrating.
Yeah, there wasn't much.
It felt like quite a period of time until I realised that the goal had been disallowed. It was...
Well, what I will say, and I'll say this as a basketball referee rather than having my football referee's head on, is that if I do blow for a violation or a foul and I do get it wrong, and it's, bear in mind in basketball, there's three referees and two referees, depending on what level you're at, I always apologise to the coach during the game, say, I got that one wrong. I'm human. So there's people moaning about the EFL giving us, you know, rubbish referees and what have you.
It's across the board.
Yeah, it evens itself out.
It's every week, and it's not just for us. It's for every team.
There's no conspiracy about the EFL and officials. So people need to get that one out of their head. That's not happening. I just think it's an unfortunate situation where the linesman is thinking he's seeing something, or he's thought he's seen something, and the reality is he actually hasn't. What he did see, well, that's a mystery. That's more of a conspiracy than one of my conspiracies.
Yeah, that is true. But having had that goal disallowed, that's when I felt our heads dropped.
Yeah.
That's when I felt as a team, they thought, are you serious? It almost felt like the team were going, well, we ain't going to get nothing out of this game today. The refs obviously got it against us. The linesman obviously got it against us. We're not going to get anything. We're not going to score a goal. If we do score a legitimate goal, we're probably going to disallow it for something anyway. And their heads just went, boom. But we did keep on pushing forward. We did keep trying to get score, but we just weren't effective. I think Barkhausen had a tame header over the bar. Was it over the bar or into the keeper's hands, one of the two? He's not very good at heading, Barkhausen isn't. Let's just leave it at that. But then we come on to Ipswich's second goal, which has killed the game, killed the atmosphere, killed the vibe, killed everything. Which, again, another breakaway, another counter-attack. Cashin doesn't put a foot in. I'd bring him down. You're not going to get sent off. Bring him down. Just take his legs
off. Well, he would. He was on a yellow after 3 minutes, wasn't he?
Well, you take the red then.
Yeah, you take one for the team.
That's exactly what we're talking about. But still.
We'll come to Aaron Cashin because I thought he had a really poor game again.
I think it's time you had your say about him now. But obviously, I think it's Marcus. Was it Marcus? No, it wasn't Harness, was it? It was Croft. Was it Croft? I think it was. But anyway, gets into the box. And I thought Wildsmith does a good job. He stands up, stays big, saves the shot. Then he made the crucial error You watch that goal again. He makes a save. Fozzie and Cashin run onto the line. Wildsmith runs to his 6-yard line and stays there. The player, I can't remember who scored it now.
Hurst,
that's it. I knew it was a famous name. It's got his back to goal. And everybody stood still. Even as a goalkeeper there, he's got to put pressure on him because he's got no one around him. He's on his own. He's got Smith facing him and he's got Fozzie and Cashin on the line. Wildsmith there has just froze. He has got, I don't care if he chased him out of the box and didn't even get the ball. He had to do something, but he just froze. That is shocking. That is bad keeping. And he's starting now to bring in quite a few errors into his game. Quite a few soft saves. Now, obviously, at the start of the season, me and you were a little bit umming and ahhing about him. He then made us change his mind. Now he's gone back to the old Joe again. And we brought this up the other week about Luke McGee. Obviously, coming in from Forest Green, their first choice goalkeeper is coming as our second choice goalkeeper.
With promotion experience.
Is Wildsmith feeling the pressure all of a sudden? Well, if he is and he can't handle it, then maybe it's time for Luke McGee to come in. I know it's daft at this stage of the season, and I'm fed up with changing goalkeepers, and it's probably the only reason why he's not getting changed is because it's that close to the end of the season. Changing now of 8 games to go is pointless. I don't know, but you're not going to have a competent back four, if you've got a keeper that's lacking in confidence. For me, that was shocking. I had people. I was literally screaming at him. I ain't going to repeat exactly what I said because you don't know who's listening. But there was words that were maybe offensive to some people, followed by "you just done nothing apart from stand there." As a goalkeeper there, I know that if I've made that save, I'm up on my feet. I am going out to him, giving him no time whatsoever. If the thing is, if he goes out to him, he's not going to turn and shoot. He's going to try and look for a pass backwards. Then it becomes easy to defend because we've got numbers back. All he had to do was slow him down, but it just froze. I've never seen out like it.
I thought both goals were as good as they were bad. So you look at the first goal, you're piling on the pressure, leaving pretty much Corey Smith on his own at the back. If they counter-attack, there's absolutely zilch pace there to get back. Zilch, there's nothing.
I can't remember who's chasing back. I think it was Fozzie trying to chase back from the initial player.
Well, Cashin was out of it straight away. Fozzie wasn't even getting close. It was a great finish. Don't get me wrong, it was a lovely goal. And if we'd scored it, the other end, we'd be praising, and washing it over and over again.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was a catalogue of errors. If you're gonna press high on a corner like that, cover yourselves. Look at your formation, look at your starting 11, look at the realities of what we have pace wise and what we don't have. And if you do come unstuck on a corner, make sure you've got enough. We've always, when you play junior football, one thing that you always, unless you are playing someone who you're going to give them a good tank in, reality is you always leave a 2-on-1 situation or a 3-on-2.
Yeah, and this goes back to what Darren Robinson was saying on last week's pod about doing the basics excellently.
Yeah.
We are not doing the basics well enough to even try and think about being... We can't even put a flaming ball across into the box at the minute.
And you're right about the second goal. The second goal was a catalogue of errors. Again, it's almost embarrassing. I've watched it 2 or 3 times and I couldn't watch it anymore. It made me grimace.
It was so preventable. Look, if Cashin doesn't want to take one for the team, fair enough. But once it was almost as if like once it got through... They thought he was going to score. And when Wildsmith made the save, great save. Can't fault him for that save. Stood up, made the striker pick a side. To be honest, it was a poor effort, but he's made the save. Great save. You've got to react then. And it just felt like Cashin and Fozzie just switched off, went, oh, what do we do? What do we do? And then Wildsmith started chasing. You think, right, go put him under pressure. And he just stopped. everybody just looked at what was going on. Like, what
time stood still, didn't it? Yeah. Time stood still for 2 or 3 seconds. It was bonkers.
It was bad.
And he picked his spot, and it was a great finish, to be fair.
Oh, it was, yeah.
But they, as soon as you saw Ipswich lineup, and they play that 4-2-3-1, which is so effective. Like, when you've got the likes of Broadhead and Burns, like, Wes Burns is a good player. He's far too good for League One. But he's, you know, he slots in that age range of 23 to 28, doesn't he? He's in his prime.
Yeah.
And then you look at what makes life. I'm pretty sure Hurst played for Rotherham, and I think Ladapo played for Rotherham at some point. I think there were
I'm
both.
I'm sure Ladapo played.
Yeah. Was it the guy that refused to play when he was coming out of contract, and he wouldn't play the last 5 or 6 games for Rotherham? Wasn't there one of those situations where they had a player? I think it was Ladapo. I might be wrong.
But I remember Warren saying at the end of on his post match about, you know, they've got quality bringing off the bench like Freddie Ladapo. And you're thinking, yeah, well, you're going to say that was one of your ex players.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought, well, if you know them players, you know, as well as you do, then yeah, he was on loan at Rotherham, 2020, 2021, made 31 appearances. He's the son of David Hurst.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, former footballer David Hurst. So,
did he play for Sheffield Wednesday?
He did. He made his debut for Sheffield Wednesday. Oh, David Hurst, or his son?
David.
Yes, he did. Made his name there. He's actually on loan at Ipswich Town. Yeah. Last year he was on loan at Blackburn Rovers, Portsmouth, and then, yeah, he played for Rotherham 31 times. So, Warren knew what it was coming up against. And Ladapo, the same. He knew exactly what was coming up against. But he just didn't seem to manage that situation. When you come up against former players, you would think that your little black book of notes would be full of everything that you expect them to do. And I just think we didn't do any. I don't know. I just thought that Ipswich were a good side. I'm not going to take it away. Even though people listen to the pod saying Ipswich are the best team in the league. At the moment, they are. They've got 7 games without conceding a goal.
That's what I mean. I think, obviously, this is why I think had we scored that goal, they've, do you know, like I said, well, we touched on it last week with Darren. I know I'm going back to Darren's because it's absolutely brilliant podcast. If you've not listened to it yet, go check it out.
Yeah, please do. It's
absolutely
amazing.
Fantastic. But he mentioned then about obviously psychology and how Derby got hard to lose. Again, got lost against West Ham, all of a sudden things turned. You just feel then, had Ipswich conceded that goal, they were going, oh, what do we do now? We've not conceded a goal in 7 games. We've not been level in 7 games. Where do we go from here? Which is why I truly believe had that goal counted, we would have been having a different discussion today.
Yeah, and we'll move on from the goal and we'll talk about Paul Warren's post-game interview, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, right, I did as well. It was the usual drivel. Yeah, good performance. Just didn't get the look of the rub of the green, etc. But in fact, Chris, I'll let you take it away because we both know what you said, but I'll let you.
Yeah. So the thing that stood out for me was the fact he changed his attitude towards the squad. 2 games ago, after the Fleetwood game, his exact words were, there's enough through the building to get us promoted. There's enough here. He said on Saturday after the game that major surgery is required. Now, he's changing his focus on and his opinion on what the squad has and what the squad needs in the space of 2 games. And I found that really disheartening. That a manager can change his opinion. Now, whether his opinion is right or wrong, and yeah, we do need surgery, we all know that. Mm. But hang on 1 second, that's not what I'm wanting to discuss. This is your leader who's basically turned around and said, I need major surgery to my team.
Yeah.
yet 2 weeks ago, he was backing them saying, I've got enough through the building. I've got enough through the door to get us promoted. What has he seen? Or is it a case that he's ran out of ideas with what he's got? Because the squad was put together at the last minute. We're not going to go over old ground. You know my feelings. I would have given Liam Messina the season personally. It was his recruitment. I think Darren tended to agree with us on the podcast. It was his recruitment. It was his team. Why give him the role of recruiting a squad knowing damn well you are not going to finish the season with the leader? You've got now got a guy pretty much on one hand not giving up, but on the other hand he's saying in his post-match interview, we need major surgery.
So here's the feeling I got off that interview. That man, our manager, is under no pressure. He is under no pressure to get... When Liam was in charge at the start of the season, he was adamant, we've got to get this team promoted, we've got to get the squad promoted, etc. You know, that was his target that has been set by the board. Obviously, Warren comes in, says the same thing, we want to get promoted. Now, like you said, all of a sudden it's changed. My vibe now that I'm getting is he is under no pressure whatsoever to get us promoted. Whether he's spoken, you know, again, speculate. Let's speculate. It's good to be speculative. Whether he's had conversations with Plows, Stephen Pearce, whoever, and said, this squad, if I get us promoted, is not good enough to fight in the championship to stay up. I wonder if that conversation has taken place or a similar conversation has taken place, because at the minute, we are cruising. There is absolutely no reason why he's changed. I can't think of any other reasons why he's changed his tune. Why all of a sudden he's saying we need major surgery? Well, major surgery in League One is going to cost a lot less than major surgery in the Championship. We had this discussion with Darren about contracts not being renewed and that sort of things and how that can psychologically affect the players. And we are just, I think we're just seeing it now that we are now cruising to the end of the season.
We are lucky in the sense that we've got certainly five back-to-back winnable games. Although saying that, you look at some of the teams that are in that five and they've picked up results this week. And also last week in others, you know, Cambridge got a win this week, just gone. Milton Keynes got a very good draw. Forest Green beat Chef Wednesday last week. So Exeter beat Barnsley. So all of a sudden, there is a challenge over the next five games.
It's almost like he's trying to say, I don't know, it's almost like he went, well, we're still going to try just to appease the fans. But he knows that he can't do it with this squad. And granted, it, you know, maybe he can't. Maybe, I've said on paper, you know, on paper, this squad is good enough to get promoted.
I'm adamant it was. Yeah,
it was going to get promoted.
Got it wrong by the looks of it. And, you know, I'll put my head up high and accept that. But, you know,
I just thought depth.
I'm always the optimist.
At the start of the season, I did think depth-wise, we were lacking it, and it was just going to be mid-table. And I did say that, but then I changed it to playoffs. You know, when I finally saw us start playing, but unless some sort of, I don't know, someone flicks a switch and gets the players' heads on right, gets the coaching staff's heads on right, then we're just going to end up with, I don't know, maybe eighth or ninth finishing this season.
I just thought that he was giving a hint that major surgery is going to happen. We know that. I just wonder whether the Trevor Birch visit a couple of weeks ago was integral with what's going to happen with Derby County Football Club through the summer. Because I just wonder whether that was a planned meeting to look at the business plan that's happened throughout the season and whether there is now leniency going to come our way, as I think it will happen personally. And I just wonder whether he's now sort of almost, I don't know, you know, again, we're speculating. I hope he hasn't shut down from this season, and I hope he does give it everything for the last seven games, because, you know, you look at Sheff Wednesday, all of a sudden they're wobbling. That's become now, to me, a potentially winnable game, because they haven't had a result now in three.
You look at Bolton. Bolton just spanked Plymouth. I know it was in the EFL Trophy final,
but it's a very relevant, though. It's a relevant result.
It is. At the end of the day, Plymouth, whether they, how serious they took it, I don't know. Didn't watch it, but losing, getting spanked 4-0 at Wembley.
They didn't play their strongest team.
Well, wow. That was a bit of a cough. Sorry about that. Well, that's by the by. It can still knock a team's confidence. Bolton now will be looking at it and go, look what we just did.
Yeah.
At Wembley, in front of 80,000 people.
Yeah.
We can now revive our season and make sure we get playoffs, you know, because we've done it. We've won at Wembley.
There's no reason why
we can't do it again.
We could have done with the reverse result, shouldn't we? We could have done with Plymouth spanking Bolton, to be fair.
Yeah, it would have proper. I think that would have knocked it out of them.
I think the one team we haven't spoken about on that, looking at the running, is Portsmouth got another win. Mm. And they're now three behind us, and we've got to play them at their place. So that's going to be a sticky wicket, as they say. That's going to be a tough, tough game.
I don't think we're going to have any easy games. That's the reality of it.
No. But I go back to the Paul Warne interview. The last thing I'll say on it is that it was the first time, and I'm not using the reasoning of some fans where it's tiredness. These are professional athletes. I turn around and say to people, look at ice hockey players, look at rugby players, look at basketballers, look at professional athletes who day in, day out, literally day in, day out, go on a court and play, go on an ice rink and play rugby. They the intensity that they have to play at. You know, you'll know that better than anyone, being a rugby player.
So, obviously, I didn't play at an elite level. Well, kind of did. I played two games for Northampton Saints, second team. They're a Premier League side, if anybody knows now. But I spoke to a few players. I had a few mates that obviously made it into the first team that I played with. And their training regime was 3 days training. So they train on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. On a Friday, they come in and just do a little bit of activation stuff in the gym. Saturday, they go play. Sunday, Monday would be off. I don't know how our players train, but that's how our rugby team trains. So they can't, like you say, Chris, you can't blame tiredness. And I know it's different sports, etc. But if you've not played rugby, you don't know how much it takes out of your body until you actually play it. It's a lot. So I agree with you, Chris. Tiredness at this stage of the season cannot be used as an excuse.
Now, bear in mind that, when we play football, and, I was a fullback by trade for all the years I played, I know for a fact that, it's a different gravy. We're talking elite football against amateur football, but not all 22 players are running around like headless chickens. And I have this discussion all the time about basketball, the NBA, college basketball in particular, where they will play 40 or 50 games within a space of 2 or 3 months, and it's just endless routine of play, rest, play, rest, back to back games, you know. So I'm not going to go for the excuse of they're all tired. Yes, we have a squad of only 20 players, but that still allows rotations of when they're fully fit, 8 or 9, and we've allowed one out of the door with being Liam Thompson. One thing that shocked me that finally hit home, going back to the game, was how slow we are, how lack of pace we have, and it really, really showed me then on Saturday how little pace we have at the back, and we do need major surgery. Forsyth and Cashin's pace, we all think he's had a great season, or most people think he's had a great season. I'd say he's had a good season. I wouldn't say he's had a great season. I think he's a first-year pro. I understand that argument about, you know, he's a young guy, he'll get better. His pace won't change. And his guile could change, and his experience will allow him to probably be better positioned for certain scenarios. But ultimately, you can't make a player faster to an extent to change his pathway. So I think that he's been found out now. I think a lot of teams have put one-on-ones against him. They've targeted him as the way through the back four. Down the spine, Corey Smith and Max Bird are not the quickest. I was quite... I get a bit disillusioned now. They're changing the captain's armband again. Fozzie.
I don't understand
Max,
that.
Fozzie, Max, Kurt. I don't get that. I don't get that at all. And then up top, with all due respect to McGoldrick, Collins, yeah, they've got pace. But you know what? Going back to what I said at the start of the pod about Liam Senior, we never played with pace under him. We played good passing football. Yes, it was slow build up at times, but we were still getting far more shots on goal than we are now. And it worries me that I don't think it's the squad that's necessarily the issue regarding the reasons that we all come to seventh. I think it's the tactics. I think that this squad, if it would have been kept under the regime that put it together, I think we'd have been far more successful than we are now. I just think you've got a guy through the door who we all like, Paul Warne. He's a charmer. But how long can you carry on cracking the jokes? How long can you carry on telling the stories? You know, because let's be honest, if that was Paul Warne's squad through the door that had capitulated as it is at the moment, with Paul Warne at the helm from the start of the season, we would be want a lot of people will certainly some would be wanting changes. Now, yeah. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Don't get me wrong. Please don't take that the wrong way. Paul Warne will be here next year, and he'll be able to put together his own squad. But what I'm saying is, I personally think, and Darren alluded to it, as you know, in the last pod, I think there was tinkering done when tinkering wasn't needed regarding the leadership. You know, and yes, people are going to say, move on, Chris. All I'm saying is, this is my thought as a podcast. I think that we should have stuck with Liam. I said we'd get promoted under Liam. I'm not using the excuse that we're not getting promoted because it's Paul Warne. I'm just saying that it showed to me more than any other time when you come against a very good team that plays counter-attacking football, because we had more possession than Ipswich. Not that we did much with it. But I just used to remember where we could control games. I used to actually quite enjoy watching Liam Rossini's football, other than Lincoln, which was a bit of a disaster, and the Shrewsbury away game, which was boring. I actually remember the Charlton game where we absolutely battered him. And I look at all the games that we played that football, and I just thought it was coming together well. But I'm going to move on because I'm going backwards.
Well, no, don't have to. I mean, we can talk about Liam. I mean, right. So, first of all, I've said this off air to you. I've said it off air to a couple of you. I said it off air on Saturday to a fan, a guy called Craig Venus, who's a Rams fan, is the fan of this podcast. But I said to him, I think Paul Warne came in knowing that this was a free at this season.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I've just mentioned. But I also said, he says, I don't think we'll get promoted. I said, my heart says I want us to get promoted. But my head says, no, we need time to fix this squad. We need time to stay down, get a competitive squad in this league. Because I just fear the worst. If we go up with the squad that we've got now, I unless there is the cash flow, which there won't be, I don't believe, to build another squad in the Championship, we'll just end up straight back down.
Yeah, I don't think the embargo will be released completely, but I do think it will be
Ed alluded to it, didn't he? He alluded to it on the show, and then obviously again on Radio Derby last Wednesday on his show there, he sort of said that he believes there will be some sort of pot to play with.
Yeah, I think they'll change the salary cap. I think they'll allow the salary, as long as you can support the salaries with your incomings, that I don't think the FL will have a problem.
Isn't there a salary cap in League One anyway? Have they got rid of that now?
Good question. Well, Darren told us, he alluded to the fact that there's a couple of teams in League Two and in non-league whose salaries are equivalent, if not more, than what we're paying.
Yeah.
And then you hear the news that Wrexham have lost £3 million already this season. And I wonder where that's gone and in whose pockets that's in.
Yeah.
Obviously, very, very happy players.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people going, oh, you don't support team.
We love the team.
You've always got to want to win. Yeah, I always want to win. Want to win every single game. Want to get promoted. Just said that. That's what my heart says. That's what the fan says. My heart as a fan says that. But in my head, thinking about it rationally and reasonably, it's saying to me, you're probably best off staying down this season, giving Paul Warren some cash to go buy or loan or whatever, get the players in that he thinks will make this squad, someone that he can coach, he can work with, he can get what he wants out of them, and go again next season. Look, I saw someone put a chart up the other day, and I think you're looking at teams and how long it took them to get out. I think Wolves took 3 seasons. I think it was Leeds took 3 seasons. Forest took 3 seasons. Wigan took 2, I think it was. You know, Sheffield Wednesday, they're on their second year now, I believe, aren't they?
Yep.
So it doesn't have to be a rush job. It doesn't have to be down and up, down and up. It's, I think, better going to be just the end of the day. People keep saying it. Remember, we've got a club now. We didn't have one. Yeah, well, we've got a club now, and that's fine. So what this club now needs to do, we've got the owner in. We've got what some people may say is a capable League One manager in Paul Warren.
Here's a question then on that, Simon. Two things. Number one, I put a poll on Twitter of would you rather take promotion or would you via the playoffs, or would you rather rebuild from the very first day of and knowing that you can start doing pre-contract signings straight away. And it was split. It was incredible how the opinion differed. You know, so a lot of fans wanted, of course, promotion to the playoffs and we'll take what comes. And if we come 21st, great. Which we spoke with Nick Webster.
Yeah,
and we all agreed 21st would be fine. The second thing was, if they're going to employ Paul Warren and change the manager after only, I think, was it 11 games or 9 games? I can't
nine
remember.
Games.
9 games. What was the reason if there's no pressure on him? If it's a free hit, why bring a manager in after 9 games? What was so wrong? Because we were 7th then, playing good football. Well, yeah, it wasn't fast-flowing football, but we had plenty of opportunities on goal. We were all moaning then that we couldn't hit a barn door.
Yeah.
But we were starting to score, you know, with wins against Wickham, Bristol Rovers, etc. Peterborough. The question I say is, why did Stephen Pearce bring in... I don't believe for 1 minute it was David Clowes. I do not believe for 1 minute David Clowes made that decision.
No.
What was the reason behind changing the manager after such short time, Simon, if promotion wasn't?
Because I think it was. I think originally it was. Let's get promoted, get a stack full of money. That's what I thought it was. I agree with you. I don't think Clowes made that decision, or probably did make the final decision, but I think he was advised by a certain somebody in that boardroom of his that may have or may not have been there in the old regime to get rid of Liam and to bring in Paul, because Paul's been there, done it and seen it all before. As I said, I doubted Liam. And I said right at the start of the season that I'd like to get Paul Warren in because he's been there, done it, seen it, got a T-shirt, all that malarkey, you know, and I was happy when he came in. I'm still happy that he's our manager now. And I still think he needs 2 transfer windows, at least, as a minimum, to try and stamp his, put his stamp on this squad. But obviously, we look back, weirdly enough, we look back at Rossini's time here, after, is it last week's pod, I think it was, after recorded it, off air, we looked back and went, why did we sack Rossini? He lost 2 games, 2 out of 9 games.
You can't moan about the football because the system was based on the squad he put together and they knew it.
And this is it. And you have to think about it and you go, well, actually, he was sacked at a really bad time. Yeah, it wasn't great. Let's be honest, it wasn't great to watch when we first started. But you've just got 20 new players or 15 new players in wherever it was. Yeah. They're going to take time to gel.
Yeah, and they'd only got beat twice. One was a shite show.
Yeah, one was Charlton, weren't it? That was where we dominated them for 9 minutes. And they got a goal on the break.
And Lincoln.
And Lincoln, which was just shit. Oh, no. No. This was three losses. We lost against Plymouth.
Yes, we did.
After Lincoln.
We did. Yes, we did. You're right.
That was it. Then he started to turn it around. We got the wins against Wickham. We got the wins against Peterborough.
Bristol Rovers.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers. No, that was Warn.
Was that Warn? Was it? Apologies.
Because then after, I think it was after the Peterborough game when we came back from 1-0 behind it.
Yeah, that's right.
Came in. We had Cambridge away. And I think you're right. I think maybe looking back now, I'm not, Liam didn't do anything wrong. He was a brand new manager that had just brought in a brand new team. Let's be honest. He brought enough players. We had to buy players to get a competitive squad. And he did that. And I just don't know. We can look back now and go, was it fair? Was it unfair? But at the end of the day, that's what's happened.
We beat West Brom as well in the FL Cup.
Yes, in the Cup. Yeah, we did.
We had some pretty good results. Yeah, we beat Wickham, beat Cambridge. Yeah, look. You're right. Bristol Rovers under Paul Warne. Apologies on that. I quite like the football of Liam Brissini. What I find really interesting is that when Liam was in charge...
Just on that, I like the football under Paul Warne when we were on a long, unbeaten run. I never felt at all that we were going to lose any game on that run. And I felt if we went 1-0 behind, it didn't really matter. We'd still come back and win it.
Well, the most frustrating game I've watched this season was definitely Charlton, the first game, when we absolutely... Some of the football we played was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we absolutely battered them. And how we didn't get away with the win is beyond me. It still grinds me now.
But like the benchmark that did.
Yeah. And I thought, if we're going to play like that, we're not going to be able to sustain that every game. There's going to be teams that... But I really enjoyed that. And I know with this podcast is probably people are saying, why are we talking about the past? We're not. We're talking about what is, you know, if Paul Ward's going to do major surgery because it's not his squad, I ask the question, why did we change it so early in the season? That's what we're saying. So send us your thoughts. You know, listen to this pod. Tweet us. Contact Simon on Facebook, Instagram, and give us your thoughts on why you think Paul Warne came in at such an early stage in the season, because Simon's spot on. They were starting to gel. The players understood the system that Liam played, and it was a completely different system. And now we've got square pegs, round holes. And surgery-wise, going back to that, we're pressing the reset button again.
We're going to have to call Booper. We're going to have to call Booper on this one.
Yeah. We're going to have to press the reset button, third year on the trot, and that is not helping the club. And all right, we had an administration between, I know people's going to argue that, but
do you know what the weird thing is though, Chris?
Go on.
I called this. I said this is what was needed to be done, what, 4 seasons ago? John Philip Cocu came in.
Yeah.
I said on air, live on Radio Derby, that I think this squad needs to go to League One. Because it's poison.
Yeah.
It is absolute poison. And it's dying. It's decaying. There's too much rotting from the inside. This is what I said. And I got laughed at. Oh, no, you never want your club to get relegated. I said this club needs to go down. It needs to get rid of the players on the big wages. It needs to rebuild. And if that takes 1 or 2 seasons and it makes us come back stronger, then that's what needs to be done. You look at Bolton, for instance. Bolton were hours away from going in the same situation as us. They were hours from being liquidated. Ended up in League Two because they had to play the base of their under-21s team. But now look at them. They're coming back. They're on the brink. They've just won, like I say, they've just won the Papa John's trophy. they are obviously in the top, you know, they're in the playoff spots. They've got a good manager. They've got a good setup there. It had to take patience and it had to take time. And I just feel that this is what this club needs. As much as I want us to get back to the Championship, I will settle for another season or two in League One if that's what it takes to get this club fully back on its feet.
Yeah, I will still say the optimist that we'll, you know, I want promotion. I still believe that we could still get it. You know, football's a funny old game. One thing I'd like to say, we'll move on from the subject and quickly talk about the next game, is the three promotions that Paul Warner's had and the three relegations. I wonder how many player changes were between promotion one and promotion three. Did you have to do any major rebuilding? Because if I remember rightly, there was barely any changes at all.
I think you're right. I think they didn't have much of a budget, which is probably why they kept on yo-yoing. But again, you know, you look at it where he left them. He left them in eighth. You know, and now look at them. They're obviously back down the table. Would that have happened if he'd stayed? Who knows? We don't know. May have done, may not have done.
But he to me, had a start like Cambridge did in League One. Mm. Darren mentioned it, didn't he? He said, look, you know, you look at Cambridge, you had that freak start where they were in the top three for the first nine or ten games, and then they couldn't hit a barn door since. Mm. So, you know, I think that the Rotherham start was hype. Yes, he should be proud that he left him in eighth when he left, but how much of that was his work and how much of it was adrenaline?
I mean, I'm amazed how many people actually I saw on Facebook and whatnot on Saturday say, oh, can we just end the season now?
Yeah.
Can we just finish it now? I'm fed up with it now. We're not going to get playoffs.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's... And that's the way it feels. But you think about it. We've lost the last two home games on the bounce. In fact, we've not won at home in three games now. Haven't scored in... Is it three? Is it more? I think it's more than three. Is it three they've not scored in?
We scored at Plymouth.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? We've not scored. Yeah, it is three games. So we've lost the last three games 2-0. We've conceded two goals in our last six games.
And I think people want the season to end, Simon, because of that, because of the fact that we've never looked likely in the style that we're playing and in the formations that we're playing to actually get a result. We spoke about game management. You're right, though. It's the hope that kills you, isn't it?
Ed
Dawes says that all the time.
He does. I mean, you look at that run, and obviously we lost to West Ham, but then we came back and spanked Morecambe 5-0. But then following that, the performance against Wickham, we scored twice. We conceded three times. Shit. Lincoln, again. Another... What?
Oh, you make me laugh.
And then Lincoln, again. Another poor performance against them. They got a man sent off, and we eventually scored the equaliser, but we weren't great.
Yeah, an agent Plange came on and did absolutely laugh all.
I felt Charlton looked like, okay, it was a okay performance. We got the win, we got the job done. Obviously got spanked by Barnsley. Beat Cheltenham, again, a team you expect to beat, especially at home. Shrewsbury, though, was the disaster. And I think this is where it's really come to fore, where we've gone, people have started losing hope, is you throw a 2-0 lead at home to Shrewsbury. You then go to Plymouth, throw a 1-0 lead away. You go to Oxford, you get a scrappy 3-2 win. Then you get beat on your own back garden by Fleetwood, 2-0. Absolutely appalling. Get battered by Peterborough, played well for 45 minutes, went to bed. And then get beat at home to Ipswich, which, again, the performance I don't think it was as bad as many people made out. I just think the goals we conceded were just poor, and everyone's just gone, you can't be bothered now.
So my motivation would be to those Derby players is, you know, you could be playing Forest and Leicester next year.
That's true. I tell you what, though, I think Leicester might go now. They're second from bottom, managerless.
Yep. Forest are only 1 point above the relegation zone. Leeds are in there. Yeah, what more incentive do you want for Derby fans where you can see Leeds, Leicester, and Forest fighting for their lives? You know what I mean? Yeah, what more incentive do you need? But again, it comes back to that disassociation between connections with the football club and, you know, the passion that we have for this football club. Can I just say, I thought the Ipswich fans, you know, were fantastic.
Oh, they were incredible.
And
probably the loudest fans I've seen in our park all season.
Yeah. And that journey from Ipswich, as we know when we do the reverse journey, is not easy. And, you know, yep, they're having success and fair play to them. And they are a big club. And, you know, Ipswich Town and Norwich in the same league will always be a good value game to watch on Sky. So, you know, good luck to them. You know, I think now they will go up, just leaving the Ipswich game.
I still don't think that the top two races now, I think the top two race isn't over now. You look at it from Barnsley in fourth, they're on 75. Ipswich in third on 78, Plymouth second on 80, and then Sheffield Wednesday, who basically had two games in hand on everybody, have now, people who got a game in hand on them have got 80 as well. So it's far from over.
No, it is. You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's going to take it right to the rear end. You're absolutely spot on. Like, you know, let's just quickly look at the fixtures coming up.
Yeah, we've got four games in 11 days. Now, obviously, yeah, we mentioned the Easter period and tiredness. Do you expect us to see him rotate a lot? I know we ain't got the biggest squad to rotate, but four games in 11 days. What do you think he does?
I just hope that one lesson that he learned from the Ipswich games is, you know, is that you can still play counter-attacking football. We can be dangerous from set plays. You know, do you set up to be, you know, to not be so open and suffer from the counter-attack?
Well, I think so. The first goal, there's no excuse for that, really. But the second one, I get, you know, we're pushing for an equaliser. We are sending bodies forward, and you get hit on the counter. But the first one has got no excuse for it, really. You should not be beaten on the counter-attack within, 12 minutes, was it, something daft like that?
No. And I don't really want to talk about, you know, Forest Green as a fixture. I know that other podcasts will do previews on it, and we may do a preview show before then. But what I will say is that this Friday's fixtures, again, could really change people's enthusiasm about the season, not just Derby, but other fans. And we'll quickly go through them. So you've got Barnsley away at Burton. You've got Bolton, they're away at Exeter. That's a horrible fixture, and we've got that one to come.
Yeah.
You've got us away at Forest Green. You've got Wickham away at Ipswich. Well, you know,
that could be breathing space for us.
Exactly. You've got Portsmouth away at MK Dons, who got a great result at the weekend.
Portsmouth have come back into this fight now for me.
Yep.
And for you. I know you've been speaking about the last couple of weeks, but they have come back into this now. They're only three points away.
But what I will say is MK Dons are now fighting for their lives and got a great result against Chef Wednesday, if I remember rightly. Chef Wednesday are away at Oxford. Plymouth are away at Morecambe. And then the really interesting game is Shrewsbury at home to Peterborough. We spoke about Cottrell and how he's a wily old fox. Darren Ferguson's a wily old fox.
That's going to be a proper League One clash.
That to me has got one of the meanest defences against one of the free-flowing scorers. That's got 0-0 written all over it.
Well, Peterborough managed a 0-0, didn't they, the weekend against Oxford?
Yeah, so I would take a 0-0 there. I would take MK Dons holding Portsmouth 0-0. I think Ipswich are going to do Wickham. If we could come out of Forest Green Rovers with a 1-0 win, put us back, you know, and if Bolton slip up at Exeter, all of a sudden, you're going into...
You're going into Monday's fixture against MK Dons.
At home, feeling a lot better.
If we can get 6 points out of the next two games, you are going, all of a sudden you're changing your attitude again and going, we're going to get playoffs again.
And I'll tell you why. Because on Monday, Wickham are at home to Forest Green. Portsmouth are at home to Morecambe. Peterborough at home to Exeter. And Bolton at home to Cambridge. So all our rivals, all of us, in those positions, 5, 6, 7, 8 are all at home to teams that are all on paper beatable. So I would much rather go into the Monday fixtures with that victory against Forest Green. You know, the motivation is there.
There is.
It's there. And, you know, I just want to say that for people listening to this pod, we haven't been negative tonight. We're basically being
realists
and frustrated that we can see what can be done. Let's not go to Forest Green with a gung-ho attitude that just because they're bottom of the league, we can steamroller them. We can't steamroller them. We've proven that we can't steamroll anymore. But if we go there with a good mentality of certainly set up that we don't lose and then look to do a counter-attack or a set play or a formation goal, come out of there 1-0, because it's going to be a scrappy game, let's be honest. It's going to be one of those horrible places where it's going to be a tight...
In fairness, haven't they got a 4G pitch?
That's a good question.
I'm sure they've got a 4G pitch.
I know that they don't sell meat pies.
Yeah, I know they're vegan, aren't they?
Yeah. They're all self-contained, aren't they? It's all recycled.
I'm sure they've got a decent pitch there. I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong. I might be talking out my back bottom, but... you know, obviously we steamrolled them at home 4-0. You know, two goals, McGoldrick hat trick, wasn't it?
At home.
Is that his first one? You know, so you do expect. I know it's away, but if they do have a 4G pitch, the grass is probably, it's 4G. It's going to be long. It's not going to be like a. It's not going to. I know, obviously, 4G is 4G, but I've played on a 4G pitch. I hate them. I do. Can't stand them.
I'm just having a look now whilst you're talking. It's called the New Lawn Stadium.
The New Lawn Stadium. If they've got a 4G pitch there, that'd be class. What lawn? They've got a new one. It's 4G.
I'm not sure if it is 4G or not. I'm just trying to look now. They had a lot of postponed games in 2021 because of frozen pitches. So they may well have. Someone may tweet us and go on Instagram and say that they have or they haven't, but. It's one of those stadiums where I think the capacity is somewhat very low, 46,000, something like that. It's going to be not an intimidating crowd, but it's certainly going to be a venue that we should have confidence going into.
Yeah.
And hopefully come out there with the most important thing, which is by hook or by crook, come out there with a win, guys. I don't care if we park the bus. We have 21% possession, and I don't care. Let's go back to, like I said, Billy Ball. Let's go back to Billy Davis football. I really don't care about quick, fast play transition. I just want to come out of there like with a 1-0 win, park the bus, and let's go back into the playoffs.
It's not 4G. Let me just put that out there.
Well, there you go.
It says the pitch... And this is just reading off Wikipedia. So here's a fun fact about Forest Green, the New Lawn Stadium. I think it's now called the Innocent or something like that. Oh, no, it's called the New Lawn Stadium. So it says, the pitch also collects rainwater to be recycled around the stadium, and all waste cooking oil at the club is recycled into biofuel. So the club introduced a solar-powered mobot in April, which cuts the grass on the pitch and uses GPS technology to automatically guide it around the pitch without the need for human intervention. It's the first solar-powered robotic lawnmower to be used on a football pitch. Local farmers use the grass cuttings from saying to condition their soil. So yeah, it's not 4G, it is grass.
It's the green. It's officially the greenest football club in the world, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mental. Yeah. But anyway, regardless, like you said, we go there. We've got to go there and not lose. That's the real end all. Go there, don't lose. I think I'll be interested to see if he lines up again with the 3-5-2. Or is it a case of, well, I'll tell you what, we'll use the 4-2-3-1 away from home and the 3-5-2 at home?
I think he might do the 3-5-2, and I think James Chester may come in.
You know what? I'm thinking the same. And it wouldn't surprise me. We never really mentioned it, but Erin Cashin is in a minute in a...
fourth run of form.
Yeah, that's probably the nicest way of putting it. he's in a bit of a poor run of form. You know, you've sort of mentioned him briefly on previous shows, but he really is becoming a weakness at the back at the minute.
Yeah, he's being targeted. You see, if it was me, I'd play the three at the back. I'd probably go Hayden Roberts, Fozzy, and Chester.
Would you not keep Rooney in? I didn't think he did much wrong on...
No, okay.
On Saturday.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout. But I didn't think Hayden Roberts did much wrong. I just think that Hayden can play it.
Yeah,
centre half.
I get it, but Roberts and me, I think Warne put him there as a wing back to allow Mendes Lang to get forward and then obviously Hayden Roberts to cover more defensively, which didn't,
didn't work.
Yeah. I just think, I don't think Rooney did anything wrong.
Well, he took him off again, didn't he?
I don't get it. I just don't understand it. I'd have rather him took Cashin off.
I agree. There's this untouchable attitude that he can't be removed out of the team.
Don't get me wrong. He is.
Let's be honest. He should have been sent off. I think that booking was very, very lenient in the third minute because he led with the elbow.
Oh, did it? Oh, obviously. I couldn't see it from where, because I was in the north stand. All we saw was two players go up and then clash. It looked like.
Oh, he leads with the elbow. He's nowhere near the ball. I listen. I always, after I've watched the game, I also listen to commentaries and various highlights and various different opinions to get a feel of what people thought.
Yeah.
And I know that a certain local radio station thought he was very, very lucky to stay on.
Right, okay.
So, but going back to it, I think you're right. I think a break is whatever, but I think Chester will come in. Will it be Rooney? Will it be Roberts? I think that's probably the decision he has to make. I think you're right. I think he'll stay with the 3-5-2. I don't think he'll change the midfield. You might see Barkhuizen back in and Lang out. Will Dobbin come back in? I wouldn't change Collins and I wouldn't change Didze.
No, I'd keep that. The thing is, when you play a two up top, you have to give them time, don't you, to form a partnership?
Yeah, the pitch will be half decent there. So the football, McGoldrick will be able to play his football. I think if we keep the weather decent between now and then, it's going to be dry. It's going to be a quick game. So, good shout. I think 3-5-2. Yeah, we'll probably get it completely wrong. I'm not even going to go for the formation because it's a long way to go yet before Saturday. And I have Friday. I've got no idea what he's thinking at the moment. But I would like to stick to a 3-5-2 and I'll put 10p on it that Chester plays.
I personally think he's warming, been getting Chester game time to try and bring him into the squad. He did sort of tease it, didn't he, after the...
when he was playing, wasn't he? He was doing okay. Did they play a 3-5-2 with Chester in the squad? Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They did play a 3-5-2 with Chester in the squad. I think, again, though, it says, how reliable is he? Can he give us seven games now? Seven?
Well, here's the question. Would you play... We're talking about pace at the back and we're talking about legs. And with all due respect to Curtis, okay, he's old and he's coming to the end of his career.
Harsh.
But what I'm saying is, is he any slower than Cashin and Fozzie? Honestly. So would there be an argument that he knows how to play with James Chester in a back three because he's done it with him at Hull?
That's a shout, to be honest. You could look at having a back three of Fozzie, Davis and Chester.
Experience. Chester and Davis know their games inside and out.
We are leaking goals like a sieve at the minute.
I'll tell you what, you wouldn't lose the ability to head the ball. I know Cashin's pretty decent in the air, but I just think you've got to go for experience. Now, people keep saying it's his first year, but I'll tell you what, okay, let's bring Chester in, let's bring Davis in, let's bring Foz in.
I'd like him to go back to the wing-backs of Barkhuizen and Mendes Lang because that worked before. I know we're asking a lot of them and I know it's getting to the end of the season, but even if they just give you 60 minutes, 70 minutes.
And we don't think Hurrihan will come back in.
I can't see it.
I can't see it.
I can't. I'd like, personally then, I'll pick the team I'd like to see and it would be a 3-5-2 and it would be, obviously, Wildsmith. It's pointless putting McGee in now. He won't be able to play anyway because...
No, he's on loan from them.
So, it'd be Wildsmith. I'd personally, like I say, Chester, Davis, Fozzie, back three, midfield, Barkhuizen, Knight, Smith, Bird, Mendes Lang, and then Didzy and Collins up front. At the minute, it feels like we're going for a stage where something needs to be tried differently. And that's my reason behind that.
Well, Forest Green don't score a lot of goals. They're not renowned for quick flow football. Duncan Ferguson's in charge of them. They've got to scrape out of relegation trouble. They've got to scrape to get results. So they can't get beat.
I'm interested to see what Charlie Savage is like.
I've heard good things about him.
Because he's one I'd be looking at.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about him. And yeah, you're right.
It's,
I think
it's midfielder, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be interested because I think Hoiberg will go at the end of the season. And I think he might be an ideal replacement.
Yeah. The only other debate they might have is whether it brings Harvey White back in. Bear in mind, he didn't do too bad at his last outing, you know, at Peterborough. He was the one shining light.
He was physical as well.
Yeah. So
we berated him after the Plymouth game because he wasn't physical enough. And then he comes into Peterborough and goes, balls to you, Chris and Simon. This is how physical I can be. Well, good. Yeah. Do that.
I think the only way that he will come into the team is whether he goes back to a 4-4-2 and he puts Corey Smith back at right back and he plays Knight, White and Bird and Day another.
In a 4-4-2?
I'm thinking midfield.
Yeah, I know, but...
I'm trying to think of a fourth. I'm pondering the fourth now.
I know, but we've got no one that can play wide in them three.
I know.
Unless you put Knight out wide. Knight out wide.
Unless you go for one wide player and ask him to switch wings, which I used to do as a coach. I used to play one winger.
Or play the diamond system.
Oh, the diamond. Well, there's another podcast. But yeah, we could talk about stipulations and changes all day, but... No, mate, let's just get a win. Let's get out of Forest Green with a win, please.
Yeah, I'm going just for a 1-0 win. Smash and grab. One of them sort of jobs. I'm going to get Collins, the goal scorer. I beat you to it, that's why, Anna.
Yeah, you have. And I agree. Although, you know what? It wouldn't surprise me at all if you get someone like Chester come in and we get a set-piece goal.
Yeah.
Like the goal we got to slide against Ipswich, something like that, I'd take all day long.
Just before we finish, that was one thing I actually thought were quite good. The deliveries from Mendes Lang from the corners.
Yeah,
I thought they were spot on, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we did miss Horahan for them set pieces.
But I'm with you, mate. 1-0. I don't care who scores. I don't care how it's scored. I don't care I don't care when it's scored.
Yeah.
Let's just have it.
Let's just do it. Let's hopefully we can be having
Billy Ball. Billy Ball. Let's have some Billy Ball.
Some Billy Ball. Hey, I tell you what, we'll do. Yeah, we're not gonna. Yeah, we'll do the next podcast next Monday after the MK Dons game, Easter Monday.
Yes,
if you're available, obviously.
Yes, I'm flying back from Sweden.
Sweden.
From Sweden.
From Sweden.
I'm flying back from Sweden. No, yeah. I'm going to referee some basketball.
Yeah, you're going to IKEA, really, aren't you?
I'm refereeing the Scania Cup, which is the Scandinavian basketball championship. So you get the best from Finland, Denmark, Sweden, Iceland. It's a fantastic tournament. And look, if I'm in Sweden or I'm in a good old Derby, Simon, you'll have my ears. You'll have my opinion. We'll crack on with a very good podcast.
Magic. Thank you very much for your time this evening, Christopher.
No worries, mate.
It's a privilege. Thank you guys that have listened. Remember to like, share, subscribe to the podcast. Give it a retweet when you see it on Chris's feed, DCFC_CMH, if you're not following him. Also, remember you can follow me on Facebook, Ramsright Podcast page and group, Instagram, Ramsright Podcast, and TikTok, which actually my TikTok's growing now, to be honest. So yeah, you can catch me there as well, Ramsright Podcast. And yeah, obviously, comment what you thought of the show. Comment your thoughts.
If you want to come on.
If you want to come on. Yeah, I've got... One fan has done that. One fan has asked me if he can come on. I've said, yep, you can.
Fantastic. I know we're going to do a couple more shows with Darren as well. And we've got Claire lined up, who we went on Radio Derby with and we thought that she was good. So, yeah, we'll see.
Sweet. Brilliant. Anyway... Till next time, guys, thank you for listening, and we shall see you then. And as always, come on, Derby!